Up until a few minutes ago, it was a bright and beautiful Sunday morning. When I woke up this morning, I was a little bit afraid to turn on any device and risk hearing of more personal, societal, or world-shaking trauma. Another morning in America, filled with typical things, a cup of coffee in hand, a check of the weather outside to see if I needed a winter coat. Yep. And then my fear of news of perhaps another mass shooting. It's really, mass shootings are just kind of in our background now. And if I wasn't here talking, I would probably just be there crying. We say that we don't accept it, that we cannot let this become commonplace. And yet we all stick to our same narratives of what will and won't work, who is and who isn't to blame, what sacrifices are and aren't worth the cost of freedom and life itself. So here we are again. This is not going to go on very long on this, just in case you're dreading it. As with many shootings in which guards, officers, and armed bystanders are injured or even killed, the good guy with a gun fairy tale is just that, a fairy tale. It's another way of defending guns instead of taking steps that would save actual lives. Because in reality, the good guy with a gun is often just the first to die. Because in the end, having the gun just makes you a target. I'm not going to suggest this morning that Sergeant, I believe, Hellas, that his life and how he died was not admirable. It was indeed courageous, a rare, truly selfless act that should be admired. But it should not be necessary. While his life and service should be celebrated, his death should not. To somehow, fetishize this type of bodily sacrifice is to perpetuate a dangerous myth that more armed people will somehow stop the carnage. In fact, that narrative just adds their bodies to the toll. If we truly wanted to honor the everyday sacrifice of police officers, military, and others who put their bodies on the line for our safety every day, then we would do everything within our power to take weapons out of the hands of those who would do them harm. We would reduce our need for dead heroes. Now, those of you who pay attention to our readings from the Christian scriptures realize that we're about done with the gospel according to Mark. In 3 weeks, we will be beginning the season of Advent and the Gospel of Luke for a year. We are currently in the 12th chapter of Mark, and it is such a phenomenal peek into the last couple days of Jesus' life. Now, I would repeat something that makes some of us very anxious, and it is similar in scope to the officer who died in Thousand Oaks, California, who entered the bar where people were dying. He did not enter that bar to die, but to save people. He knew, he was trained to enter the scene, to seek to bring an end to horrible injustices that were occurring inside that bar. Jesus did not march into Jerusalem to die, nor did God lure Jesus there to be killed as some atoning sacrifice. Jesus went to Jerusalem, fully aware, I think, of the danger, but more so, I think Jesus went there for the opportunities, for the possibilities that he believed were possible for the good, but not to die, but to save people, his people, whom he loved for all the horrible abuses that were occurring in his country. And in the process of standing for what was crucial to him, he was killed. He did not want to be a dead hero, nor did Officer Hellas. Sometimes after someone does something that appears perhaps actually is sacrificial, sometimes we learn from the act and we become changed because we internalize what has happened. Jesus became, if you will, elevated in his death to the status of the Christ. Officer Hellas, well, best I can tell in our society, we're just content to leave him dead. The widow's mite, or the widow who gave her last two coins, is a very classic gospel story whose context is Jesus in the temple in Jerusalem just days before his death. The story is a go-to for churches during stewardship season. Who hasn't heard the moving account of the widow who slips quietly into the temple, drops her meager offering into the treasury, and then slips away? Who hasn't squirmed when a well-meaning pastor saddles that story to its inevitable "so what" question? If a poor widow can give her sacrificial bit for the Lord's work, how can we, who are so comfortable and wealthy by comparison, not give much, much more? And I admit it, I've squirmed. But not because the question indicts my giving. I've squirmed because this woman's mite haunts me. Her story is harder edged than I like to admit. And yet something in me doesn't want her reduced to a mere stewardship moment or exploited for the sake of capital campaigns and annual budgets. I wish I knew her name. I wish I knew for sure that her real life fierceness exceeded the piety that we've imposed on her through the centuries. I hope that she died with dignity. Died. Yes, died. She died. Probably she died a mere days after she dropped those coins into the treasury box. And in case that's a surprise, consider again what Jesus said about her as she left the temple that day. I quote, "She, out of her poverty, has put everything she had, all she had, to live on," end quote. As far as I can tell from reading the Gospels, Jesus wasn't given to exaggeration. If he says the woman gave everything she had, well, then she gave everything she had. We know that she was an impoverished widow in first century Palestine, a woman living not only in the margins, but on the very outside margin of her society. She had no safety net. She had no husband or children to advocate for her, no pension to draw from, no social status to hide behind. She was vulnerable in every single way that mattered, two pennies short of the end. And if I'm getting my timing right, Jesus died about 4 days after the events in this story. And I can't help but wonder if the widow did too. And here's what makes me squirm. What does it mean to applaud a destitute woman who gave her last 2 cents to the temple or to the church, if you will, and then slipped away to starve? Is this really a story of selflessness, or is it a cautionary tale about being naive? Should we cheer or should we weep? Let's complicate the question a little bit more. Mark prefaces the story of the widow with an account of Jesus blasting the religious leaders of his day for their greed, for their pomposity, and crass exploitation of the poor. "Beware of the scribes, beware of the teachers of the law," Jesus tells his followers. Quote, "They devour widows' houses, and for the sake of appearance, they say long prayers," beautiful prayers, end quote. Their piety, in other words, is a sham, and the religious institution they govern is corrupt, not in any way reflective of the God the psalmist calls a parent of orphans and a protector of widows. And indeed, in the days leading up to the widow's last gift. Jesus offers one scathing critique after another of the economic and political exploitation that he witnesses all around him. He makes a mockery of Roman pomp and circumstance when he processes into Jerusalem on a donkey's back. He cleanses the temple's money-mongering with a whip. He refuses to answer the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders when they demand to know the source of his authority. He confounds religious leaders on taxes, indicts them with a scathing parable about a vineyard and a murdered son. He defeats them on the question of resurrection. He bewilders them with the riddles about his Davidic ancestry. So why on earth would he turn around and praise a woman for endangering her already endangered life to support an institution that he condemns? Why would he do that? And the simple answer is, he doesn't. Read the story carefully. He doesn't. Centuries of stewardship sermons notwithstanding, Jesus never commends the widow, never applauds her self-sacrifice, or invites us to follow in her footsteps. He simply notices her and tells his disciples that they should notice her as well. This is a moment in the story when I'd give anything to hear Jesus' tone of voice. Is he heartbroken as he tells his disciples to peel their eyes away from the rich folks and glance in her direction instead? Is he outraged? Is he resigned? What does it mean to him mere seconds after he's described the temple leaders as devourers of widows' houses to witness just such a widow being devoured? And worse, she's participating in her own devouring. Here's a telling postlude. Immediately after the widow leaves the temple, Jesus leaves too. And as he does, an awed disciple invites Jesus to admire the temple's mammoth stones and impressive buildings. And Jesus' response is quick in its cutting, saying, not one of these stones, not a part of this building will be left one upon another. All will be thrown down, end quote. Ouch. I wonder if the widow is still on Jesus' mind as he predicts the destruction of the temple. He has just watched a trusting woman give her all to an indefensible institution in his mind. One that refuses to protect the poor. No edifice steeped in such injustice will stand, he teaches. So I get back to my earlier question, should we cheer or weep in the face of this story? Or I guess maybe there's a third alternative. Should we call out, as Jesus did, any form of religiosity that manipulates the vulnerable into self-harm and self-destruction? Jesus notices the widow. He sees what everybody else is too busy to see. Everything else to see is too grand, too spiritual. For me, this is the only redemptive part of this silly story, is that Jesus' eyes are ever on the small, the insignificant, and the hidden. And what did Jesus notice? I don't know for sure, but I'm going to hazard a guess because I'm the preacher, right? I think he noticed the woman's courage. I imagine he took quite a bit of courage. It took quite a lot of courage for her to make her gift alongside the rich with their fistfuls of coins. Even more to allow the last scraps of her security to fall out of her palms. I think Jesus noticed her dignity. Surely she had to steel herself when widowhood rendered her worthless, a person marked expendable. Surely she had to trust, in the face of all the evidence piled against her, that her tiny gift had value in God's eyes. And finally, I think Jesus noticed her vocation. Whether she knew it or not, the widow's action in the temple that day was prophetic. She was a prophet in the sense that her costly offering amounted to a holy denunciation of injustice and corruption in her society. Without speaking a word, she spoke God's word in the ancient tradition of Isaiah and Elijah and Jeremiah and all those other prophets. But she was also prophetic probably in the messianic sense, and I think that's probably why Mark put the story where he did, because her self-sacrifice, giving herself totally away, really prefigures what is about to happen to Jesus. Perhaps what Jesus noticed was kinship. Her story mirroring his that he was writing. The widow gave everything she had to serve a world so broken, and it killed her. And days later, Jesus, all was taken away from him. I really do wish that Jesus had commanded his disciples to go make sure that that widow was cared for, given food, given housing. He didn't. Or maybe that part just didn't make the editorial cut as the gospel was written. Maybe the author just wanted that parallel sacrificial construction. I don't know. I'm going to choose, however, to believe that Jesus did take care of that woman, because that is the Jesus way. Rather than her die needlessly because good people of faith step up and they provide, Jesus was that sort of guy. Jesus did not die to save us, but I do think that Jesus died to demonstrate that we are called to save others. He showed us how to live, how to risk, how to be on an edge of giving every cent toward that which we know to be essential. You remember Aslan the lion? We're told, if you remember, that Aslan, God if you will, is not a tame lion, but one who is very good. In fact, the lion is wild. We are not called by God in today's society, in our lives. We are not called to be tame. We are called to be wild like the God who loves us. Wild. We need to be wild and challenge and change our world today and the rest of this week. Officer Hellas is dead, along with 11 others. It remains no time to be tame. If you want to hear something wild, 15 members of Congress who had an A rating from the NRA, they lost this last week their seats in Congress to 15 people. Those 15 people had F ratings from the NRA. God cannot do what is ours to do, but we must pay attention to the movement of the Spirit who is luring us to make all things new in our day. Be like God. Growl when necessary. Be wild for that which must happen. Give wildly, because many desperately need what we alone have to give.